Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show. It's a beautiful day in PEI, getting a little cool, 2 degrees Celsius, but we don't have any snow or hail or anything to make it look like the winter. Everything is still kind of green. We've got a special guest with us today. This isn't the normal Patty. This is Celebrity Patty. Patty, what did you do last night, and how can the viewers see a demonstration of that in video?
Thank you for pointing that out, Michael. And hi, everybody. Last night, I did Hospice PEI's Dancing with the Stars. It is a fundraiser that they do once a year for such a great organization and cause. I was partnered with my daughter and we were the first mother-daughter duo, and we ended up winning the Creativity Award last night.
Well, you did a great job, and for everyone that wants to see Patty on stage, we're going to put a link to the video in the show notes.
Oh, are we now? Okay.
It's a private video. You feel free to distribute it and tweet it to all your friends and send it out on your mailing lists.
Thank you.
Today, we're going to start off with buyer's agreements and why you should have one as a purchaser. I'll let you start with that.
So, as a purchaser, having a buyer's agreement in place is advantageous for you because it's the commitment of the agent to you. It's very easy. And I mean, I have many who just say, well, I'll be buying through you, Patty. And, you know, so if you do see something, you know, keep me in mind. Well, I set them up a custom collaboration site, which your agent can definitely do for you on Prince Edward Island. And it's not, sometimes it's top of mind. I do CC myself and everything, so I do get to scan and see what new properties come up. But if I have a buyer's agreement, now, much the same as my listings, you have my undivided focused attention. I've committed to finding you a property within a certain time period. So now you have that agent working for you. That is the advantage, in my opinion, for the buyer.
The biggest challenge when you're a real estate agent, particularly if you've been around for a while, is you get numerous calls, texts, and emails in regards to looking at properties, asking what's on the market. If something pops up, let me know. But for the most part, the agents are not really going to take that serious because they don't know who you are. They've never met with you. It's just another, if I could use this word, it's just more noise to add to the day. As a purchaser, it's a huge advantage to introduce yourself to the agent that you want to work with, explain exactly what you're looking for. They can tell you whether it's realistic or not. Sign a buyer's agreement, and that basically means that you're dealing with that agent. Any conversations going on or forward, you would mention to those other agents that you are represented as a buyer's agent. The other thing is you're not using the listing agent as your buyer's agent, which enters into a huge conflict as well.
Yeah, and that's the problem for an agent and why they don't give, you know, perhaps 100% undivided service and attention to that buyer, because that buyer, and we do communicate in the real estate world, and we do end up sometimes finding out the same person is emailing 10 different agents. So why should, and I'm sure whatever jobs that, you know, our listeners do, would they go to work for nothing every single day or go to work without the promise of getting, you know, a paycheck at the end of their day or the end of their week? So it's no different than in our business. This is a great business to be busy in and not make any money, because the buyer ends up finding a property, whether it's on their own or it's a private sale or something along those lines, and that agent may have committed, just because they're so excited, especially a new agent, they'll spend so much time on that one client hoping that there is a mutual relationship going on here, only to find out at the end they bought through somebody else or at an open house, or, you know, they just happen to book a showing through the listing agent because they don't want to bother but their buyer's agent. I hear that a lot.
Just like when you're listing your house and the listing agent should have a presentation to show you what they're going to do to market your home, get it sold for the most amount of money in the least amount of time, ask your buyer's agent that you're considering to show you their buyer's presentation and what they're going to do to find you the best house and negotiate the best deal for you, because having a buyer's agent can save you tens of thousands of dollars. Moving on, we've got another This is trivia time on the Michael and Patty show. And the question is, if I have a contract and I do not have a deposit, is that contract legally binding? Or let's take another for instance. If I have a contract, it says there's 2 weeks to deliver the deposit. Do I have a legally binding contract at that point if I do not have the deposit on hand? I put this in front of a lawyer friend not 3 days ago, a real estate lawyer. And I can tell you what he said, but you can guess if you'd like.
Well, if the seller has given the buyer permission to take up to 2 weeks or 3 days or whatever it is, well, then that buyer legally should be allotted that time because the seller agreed to that time period. In my opinion, that's the way the contract is written.
My understanding is you cannot have a contract on real estate that's binding unless it's bound monetarily or in some other way. My lawyer friend said, even if you give them a pen to bind that contract and that's written in the contract that you're binding it with this fancy gold pen or a Bic pen for that matter. What the lawyer basically said is he said, if you write a contract and it has, say, a week to deliver the deposit, he said, you're in a gray zone there because the contract is a contract. So in some ways it's legally binding, but in other ways it's not because it hasn't been bound. The bottom line and the point of this conversation is if you are going to write a real estate contract in the purchase and sale agreement, and this is kind of interesting, it allots you a number of hours. It doesn't say days, weeks, or months to deliver the deposit. It says hours. The implication is they want that deposit quickly to bind the contract so you're not in that gray area. Because by not having a contract that doesn't have the deposit put down yet, but there's a condition to put the deposit down, now you're violating that condition. So that contract could definitely be walked away after that so many hours has passed.
Yes, and further to that, if you are in a backup position offer, what you could do, because it's been a conversation that I know I've heard around my office and with other real estate agents, is should we pay the deposit after our offer becomes primary? And again, what best practice and to stay out of this gray zone, what you should do is, like Michael said, it's not a legally binded contract. So you should at the very least provide $500 deposit, the remaining portion of whatever the deposit amount is to be paid upon this offer becoming primary. So you should still have some sort of monetary binding amount to be introduced at the beginning of entering into a backup offer position.
If I have a purchaser that has a contract written on a house that's subject to another contract falling through and they can't put their 5% down or whatever the deposit is, I would worry about their financial capability, to be honest with you.
Okay. And fair enough. So I know you best practice, you're looking at the amount of the deposit now, but I just know you should have at least a minimum, even $100 on the onset. Now, the only problem with this is technically, and again, now this we're going down another rabbit trail here, the buyer's agent who's writing the offer on behalf of buyer offer number two coming in as a backup offer, they don't know the terms and conditions of the primary offer. So it's kind of hard to construct that. So that's really something that the listing agent should be doing.
That's a completely different conversation. But I mentioned that to you when you brought this up last week, as I said, how can you have a second contract subject to the first contract falling unless you have the specificity of that contract, as in, you know, the date, who is written by, you know, some of the key features in another offer. But under the realtor code, you're not allowed to disclose anything in that other offer. So you're just trusting the listing agent said, well, the other offer is dead or it's alive, or maybe they've amended it 50 times.
Yeah.
Moving on, this is a pet peeve of mine. And it's a major point of contention, and it's alarming that people are using geolinks as some form of legal document. If you're not familiar with a geolake, it's basically a graphical or sort of like a drawing or a map-like representation of a property you're buying in Prince Edward Island. And every property in PEI has a PID number, property identification number. I see a lot of offers coming in with geolinks affixed to them and initialed. And a few days ago, I even heard about a problem that was caused where the listing agent and the purchaser's agent was trying to confirm the size of the property by measuring the geolink. Here's the issue. Every geolink says this information may not be accurate. And in fact, it may not be. I've seen some of them off by many, many acreage and property lines that are out the 5, 6, 10 degrees. The geolink is not a survey. Patty, you're one of these people that likes to attach a geolink to an offer.
Yes. So I have a different opinion than yourself.
Well, wait a second.
Yep.
If I may insert something. If you were to insert the geolink with an offer, would it not be to your advantage to put in there, this is a graphical representation, it may not be accurate?
Yes. Well, the form says that already, like you pointed out at the bottom. So perhaps you get your clients to initial right beside where the province has already indemnified themselves as not being responsible for the accuracy of the document that they put forth and provide.
So good idea.
That might be talking this out this morning, which is why I always love having these conversations with you, Michael, would probably be a good practice to get into. However, my opinion is I do include the geo ortho map to the purchase and sale agreement. That is practice that I know my whole team does. And it is not to say that we are 100% saying that this tree, because the ortho map shows it as being within the property lines, like our clients are well informed that there might be a little bit of a discrepancy. If we have the Schedule A attached as well, the Schedule A from the deed is a written version of the survey, which I know we've covered in a previous episode, but we could always include that because if it's important to the buyer and they want to make sure they've got the property line, they can take that Schedule A and go walk the property and try to figure out the lines, or if it's that important, request a survey. So the reason I put in and think that it has value is because too many times there is administrative errors, clerical errors in inputting the PID onto the MLS system. So it's an opportunity for the agent to reconcile what PID number is on that geo coincides with the PID on their purchase and sale agreement, because we usually just prepare our contracts right off of our MLS system within our web forms. So all the information, the data is pulled from what that listing agent put down, and there's where errors can get made. So that's why I feel it has value.
What I told the listing and the purchaser's agent to do is stop measuring geolinks and just refer to the deed, because ultimately that's the document you want to reference to. Further to that, a recent survey. When I say recent, this is more particularly important when you're dealing with waterfront property, because having a survey 40 years ago versus having one done last week are going to show you two different pictures because of coastal erosion. In addition to that, I have had offers come in where there's two or three PID numbers. They've offered on one, so we're thinking, well, this is great. They're offering us full price on one third of the property. And if you're dealing with lawyers on the other end, we've stuck to that. And down at the end of the road, when they discovered they've only bought part of the property, the lawyers are more than happy to sell them the rest of the property for an increased monetary amount.
Yeah, and that's an issue.
And that's where it'd be good to have the geolinks, because it gives you more of an idea of what you're buying, even though they're not particularly 100% accurate.
See, we just came full circle on that. So the geo does have value in including it. For the realtors who are doing the agreements of purchase and sale, and you are happening to listen to this, just know typically only the PID number one gets pulled over into the agreement. I have found that if you have PID number two, PID number three, they don't always carry over to your contract. So please be mindful of that.
What Patty's referring to is the agents have the ability to use an automated system that will fill out part of the forms. I don't use it, and that's one of many reasons. But that's a good point. Next is a topic you brought up, preparing for showings. And we're not talking about turning the lights on, making it smell nice, baking a fresh apple pie. We're talking about some of the silly things that we see going on when vendors prepare showings. What are some of the things that vendors can do to make sure that they keep safety first in mind? And also, we'll touch on documents that might be laying around on the kitchen table as well.
One of the things that I found clients can do to protect themselves, because I've actually had clients contact me from open houses and said, Patty, if you're doing an open house, I just witnessed this. Do not underestimate, a realtor cannot be in two places at one time. We do try our best to corral our clients to keep them together, but you will sometimes have one who insists that they're going to go down and check the utility room, and you'll have, you know, one that will stay with you and kind of look through the home. My points are medicine cabinets. If you are on some medication, narcotics, please put those away. If you have those medicine cabinets, I've had people go through them.
And what you want to do is fill your medicine cabinet full of cold pills.
Why?
That's what they make meth out of, isn't it?
Okay. Put your medication away. Do not leave it out. The buyer doesn't need to know any information about you personally, as well as you. We don't need a situation. It does happen, unfortunately, even on our lovely Prince Edward Island here. The other things that you can do is make sure any jewelry. I have had a client, believe it or not, accuse me of stealing her ring.
I believe it.
I would not do that. And she was so upset. They canceled the listing with me because they accused me of not watching my buyer.
By the way, that's a nice ring you're wearing there. Actually, you got a whole bunch of them. Doing open houses, have you?
No, I did not take the ring. It ended up being discovered a couple days later that the daughter, the morning of the showing, noticed her mother's ring out and put it away and forgot to tell the mother. I lost that listing because of this. So if the mother had put away her jewelry in the first place, it just caused so much unnecessary stress, because I would not do that. Put your jewelry away. It would make your realtor very happy too, to not have to be responsible for it.
That's it?
Well, I can get into the documents and...
Well, just telling you a funny story here. So we had a house. It had a offer, or more than one offer, on the house. However, it was still being shown. It was a hot property. And the vendor decided to leave out the purchase and sale agreement on the kitchen table for everyone to peruse. Typically, when you show a house, a lot of information might be on the kitchen table as far as renovations and improvements, all kinds of stuff that's been done to that particular property. In this instance, the vendor decided to leave the purchase and sale open for the first offer, so the other agents knew exactly what they offered, what the closing date was, and the inclusions and everything else. Albeit, we're not going to get into a discussion whether that's ethically proper to be looking at it, but it was right there, and it's probably not something you want to do. And this goes to bank statements, investment accounts, any documents at all, jewelry, anything you don't want people to see, put them away and preferably lock that cabinet.
Yeah. And
moving on.
Well, I was going to say business cards, Michael. What is your
opinion? That's the next topic.
Well, that's leaving things out and preparing them for the showing in that.
Patty, I have a question for you moving to our next topic. When agents show a house, it is a standard practice to leave their business card. What do you think about that? I can tell you what I think.
Okay, so are we just asking about leaving the business card?
Do you think it's a good idea to leave your business card at a showing? And do you think the listing agent should take all those business cards, throw them away for the next showing, and clean the place up so there's nothing there and there's no trail of anyone showing the house?
Yes, you'd be surprised how many sellers of mine ask me what they should do with all the business cards that were left. First, best practice, realtors should leave their business card. It is confirmation that the property was shown and that someone was there. If there is any issues, sometimes I don't tell my sellers to contact the agent that showed the property. They should come through me. However, sometimes it just, you know, there might have been something that was offset or something that was broken or the door was left open. I've actually had a house where the door was left open and my seller was so upset that they called the business card, the name on the business card. So just be mindful that stuff does sometimes, a couple times a year maybe, happen. However, so your business card is, thank you for allowing me into the house. Yes, this is confirmation I was here. With regards to having your business cards all left out, so from a buyer's agent perspective, I like to see all the business cards out. I want to know, one, who I'm going to be competing with if I am going into a multiple offer situation. So I kind of do a little scan of the business cards. So that, again, is a buyer's agent perspective. It also can create a sense of urgency for my buyer feeling like, well, there's been a lot of people through this property. If I'm interested, I better move quickly. So it creates a sense of urgency from the buyer's perspective, in my opinion. It can either make them freeze and go, I'm afraid to enter into something here just in case, or it does create a sense of urgency.
If there is 5 business cards there versus 50 business cards, what do you think the potential buyer would think?
Now, that's a very good contrast. If there's 50 business cards and there's no offer on that property, what is everyone else aware of? What should I be looking for? And why haven't any of these 50 people offered on this property?
Well, if there's 50 business cards, chances are it's overpriced. Because if it had deficiencies or problems, someone would buy it.
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that, because if you are overpriced, typically you end up getting no showings. It's pretty quiet.
Well, depending how overpriced you are, if you're 400% overpriced, you're going to get nothing. If you're 10 to 20%, you're going to get those 50 business cards.
I know. But just from the buyer's perspective, though, Michael, I feel that a buyer would be looking at it as, what is wrong with this place? So from a seller's perspective now,
If 5 business cards there.
Yeah, just like the days for the business
5
cards.
You glue them together and you throw them out like a mat. And someone goes try to pick up one card and it's glued to all the rest as a prop.
Yeah, I would tell them on a daily basis, if you are getting that much traffic, tuck them away. Don't leave them all out, because it can stress out and it can make a buyer wonder what's wrong with your property. Why hasn't any of these other people offered on your property?
Do you get clients that want you to mention features about the house or the property that you know are just silly and no one's going to care about, and they're not going to buy the house just because it has a bocce ball court in the back?
They can go on a separate property feature sheet. That doesn't need to go on the MLS, but if it's deemed important to the seller, and maybe perhaps that's why the seller bought the property in the first place, then property feature sheet, I think, is very, very helpful, advantageous. It makes your seller feel good that you've acknowledged and recognized.
Bocce ball court.
Yes, because if it's important to them, if you're not listening to them, they're going to feel like, this is a selling feature, and because my agent will not put that out there, this is why it's not selling. And they will convince themselves that, even if your agent feels the bocce court doesn't have any value.
It's bocce ball.
See, I don't even know. Is this like a...
Lawn bowling.
Oh, lawn bowling. Nice. Yeah, just acknowledge, because obviously your seller has some sort of pride, emotional attachment. Recognize it, but in a separate property feature sheet is my recommendation.
Your agents will be able to disseminate what features are important and put those into the description and mention those to potential buyers. The lesser important stuff, based on their experience, will go into some form of a document that would be attached to the listing and provided with the cut sheet. Moving along here rapidly, we have relocating to PEI. I thought of you in this particular instance because when you moved to PEI from away, as we call it on the island, you had an agent that kept pushing one particular community. later to find out that that agent was from that community and that's where they lived their entire life. Do you think that did you a service? Because you didn't end up living there now.
Unfortunately, for selfish reasons, if you're a realtor listening to this and you don't want to service a certain area, don't take on that buyer. Maybe share that buyer with another agent that will, you know, show them, say, Charlottetown, and you only work Summerside. And in this instance, I really loved Charlottetown, and I wanted to look at properties. And unfortunately, the agent that I had drove me around, which helped me become a better realtor when I did get into the business, but drove me around all these back streets, didn't kind of reground me. Here's the main street. Now we're going to this property. Here's the main street. I was so confused driving around Charlottetown that I felt Charlottetown was so confusing. All these back streets, you know, it seemed to take forever to get to each property. I didn't think it was a very well thought out city, only to find out they were from Summerside and it was convenient for them. They could whip out, show a property, and then get back home, you know, at a reasonable time period. And kept convincing that Summerside was the place to be on the island. Now, Summerside's a lovely city. I have nothing against it. I think the Credit Union Place and the trails, and there's so many lovely things, perfect for families. However, I did end up moving out of Summerside and back to Charlottetown about 5 years later. So, you know, just make sure that your agent's comfortable servicing or showing you properties in an area that you are more drawn to, because it's you that has to live there at the end of the day.
I think you want to find an agent that's not going to be prejudicial or biased towards an area that they live in for their own reasons. And if you're coming to the island, Teddy and I have a whole routine of self-discovery to determine what part of the island you might like. And I think one of the key features about moving to PEI is keep in mind all these pretty little places in the summer also have winter. So that's something to keep in mind, because it's going to be totally different. And that 5-minute drive could be 45 minutes with ice and snow.
Yeah. And if I can just say, Michael, quick, I usually will ask my buyer clients, I need to know where they're from. And that sometimes they get a little frustrated and they'll say, I have to answer all these questions before you'll show me a property. The answer is yes. I need to know where you're from so I understand the lifestyle that you're used to. I need to know a little bit about what your expectations are so that I can help perhaps
Which
gently
goes back
guide.
To your buyer's contract, and now you can service them better because you spent 10 or 15 minutes discovering what they're looking for, what their goal is at the end of the day, rather than some random willy-nilly phone call to see a house out in O'Leary or Surrey that they know nothing about. It's probably not going to be a fit to begin with. And nobody knows this because you've never had a conversation with them.
Yeah, 10, 15 minutes is a quick call. My buyer's intake process, I'm on the phone anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour, my first call with them.
Do you have people asking you when they're buying raw land, to typically lots within communities, if there's a building requirement, if the subdivision says you have to build within a year or two? Have you had that question before?
Yes, I have had that question.
And what do you tell them?
We don't typically have covenants on the island that state that you have to build in a certain time period. Usually that's in a newer subdivision where the developer...
It's in high-density cities where the city will actually help the developer, or they will be the developer, and they'll put in 200 or 300 lots, and they'll sell these lots off, but there's a requirement to build. In other words, they're not developing parkland here. They're developing building lots because there's a shortage of houses, and people that buy these lots have to build within that timeline. PEI, from what I've seen, I haven't seen any location anywhere on the island where there's a requirement to build.
No, I have not seen that either.
So if you want to buy a piece of land as a long-term investment, knock yourself out and start buying land.
Yeah, just make sure, do your due diligence.
Well, we're not
read the covenants. No, I'm just saying, read the covenants, but the chances of that being a requirement or a covenant on PEI, all we're saying is it's probably pretty slim. But you should read the covenants and not 100% say, Patty and Michael said, that doesn't happen on PEI. Because you never know. There could be one being developed today that's going to end up being a requirement for Michael.
There could be. So have you had any issues when you're dealing with American sellers and you end up wiring money in Canadian funds to the States and then they can't convert it into U.S. or then there's, and then the seller says, well, it was supposed to be for X number of dollars and it's this and that because of the conversion factor?
Yeah. Are we talking about the deposits or?
What I'm talking about is when we sell property in PEI, it's in Canadian funds. We used to do U.S. funds when the U.S. dollar is more stable. We canceled that years and years ago. We do all our transactions in the Canadian dollars. When we wire your money, once you've sold your house down to the States, sometimes the bank can't handle that. Or I've heard of banks holding checks for 6 months to clear them. And as well, there's going to be a currency difference. So whatever amount it is today may not be the same amount in 6 months. So keep that in mind and always have the money wired in U.S. funds from the origin, which is in Canada.
So can I ask, Michael, just a curious question. Would you recommend they have a, especially if they own Canadian property, have a Canadian bank account?
It's not as easy to do that in the States as it is here. I have both U.S. and Canadian bank accounts. But I do know I've had a number of clients. I had one client that received a check and the bank told him it'd be 6 months and it was like a $60 or $75 surcharge to cash that bank draft.
Wow, okay.
So it's best just to keep it in U.S. or if you're going to play the currency game, you know, keep it in Canadian, keep it in Canada and invest it in Canada and then pull it out when the dollar changes. If it changes, because it could be 30 years from now. Who knows? You know, when you see the Canadian dollar being worth more than the U.S. Which brings us to another American, or let's not say American, but non-Canadian. When you sell a property, do you get all of that money if you're a non-Canadian resident, Patty?
No.
And why is that?
Because CRA, Canadian Revenue Agency, wants to make sure that they get their tax portion if there's capital gains on the sale of the property before the money is taken out of the country.
So what happens if you sell your house for $100,000, the lawyer is going to keep, is it 25%?
25%.
Of the proceeds until you file a income tax return, and only then are those monies released, or you could potentially owe more income tax.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, your agent, if your agent doesn't bring it up and you are a non-Canadian listening to this and you own land and are contemplating, or you're already have your property listed onto the market, and it doesn't matter where you are in Canada, you should have already connected with an accountant and a lawyer to start the process of your clearance certificate. And what documentation will be required for that clearance certificate to be submitted so that you can start working now in putting together your package for CRA.
And when you're doing your income tax return and you're looking at that $100,000, let's just say it's a cottage for all intents and purposes, we have mentioned before that any property management fees, cleaning, cutting the grass, maintenance, or anything else may potentially be able to be written off against the capital gains. So it's important in an ideal world, if you are buying a cottage in PEI, to keep detailed spreadsheets or books so you know every penny that goes into that property, because down the road, that's going to be very handy information to have, including the receipts, so you can offset your capital gains or income tax expense.
Yes, and in saying receipts, Michael, one of the things that I notice many of my non-Canadian property owners who have sold in the past, they will have all their documents in a shoebox or somewhere in another location and not on PEI. I suggest you keep a record, scan everything as you go along so it's not such an insurmountable task, you know, later on. However, if you are looking to sell and you are somebody that has a lot of paper, I would be creating a folder in whatever kind of cloud system that you have, having all these documents scanned and saved so that when you do come up to Canada and you do want to start the process, it's an easy email, you know, to a lawyer or an accountant. Here's all my receipts. Here's all my documents. Instead of saying, well, I have to wait because I'm out of the country, I'm traveling. I got to wait till I get back to get at my shoebox so that I can start going through the documents and start putting everything together.
So take all your documents and put them in the cloud. And if you don't have the technical ability to do that, contact Patty and she'll walk you through the whole process and scan your receipts for you. Let's close her down. Patty, yes. I'll hand it off to you. You did such a great job closing it down last week. I'll let you do it again.
Well, I would just like to thank everyone for listening. If you do have any topics or questions, anything about Prince Edward Island that you would like to know about, please let us know. You can reach Michael or myself. You can just Google our names if you want our email addresses too, and just send us a message directly. And we would be more than happy to feature your questions on a next episode. We greatly appreciate you listening to us, and we wish you a great week.
And be sure to give us a star rating, some feedback, and have a super duper day. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.